Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are Next Fan Up. My name is Mark Sitko. I, sadly, am the Eagles super fan. I'm coming out of a horrible loss we just finished a couple minutes ago. This is Sunday night. With me tonight, I actually have a super fans and a special guest. It is a great night, even though it is a horrible night for the Eagles in Dallas. We had a really tough game. We beat up each other, a game of attrition where both of us, we lost our inside linebackers. They lost their quarterback to a broken collarbone. It was rough. But let's start off first. Our special guest tonight, Ramona, who's here. Val, thank you so much for being here. How you doing, Ramona?
Yeah, I'm all right.
I thought you were there for a second, but no, that was just sadness pause. Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you for being here, Ramona. We really appreciate it. We love what you do on Sports Gal Pal. And the collaboration we've had between these two podcasts has been really great. Thank you for joining us. I also have Nick, the super fan for Kansas City. How you doing, Nick?
I'm much happier than I was 3 days ago, so decent.
Nice, nice. You're telling me there's light at the end of the tunnel. I hope I will be happier in a couple days, too. Great. I'm happy, Nick. Thank you. Sam, I have Sam here as well. He is one of our rival superfans from the New York Giants. They also had a rough 2 weeks. How are you doing, Sam?
You know, as Ramona knows, I'm going into reset for Fournette mode for the next 2 years, so it's all good.
Reset for Fournette. Love it. Love it. And then finally, we have one other super fan tonight. The one super fan who's probably the happiest, Monty.
We just beat the Ravens, and my voice is a little bit hoarse. I was yelling at the TV. It came down to the wire, but I am doing fantastic.
Awesome. As you know, yes, like as I say, Monty is the Raiders super fan. That is great, man. So, yeah, all we're doing today is kind of recapping all of these games. We're going to try to give you a little bit of insight on each of these games. We have enough super fans here that we're going to actually have fans for a lot of these games. Starting off, we want to talk about the Thursday night game, Denver versus KC. I'm going to kick that out to Nick. What did you think, Nick? What did you think of your team in that game? How did it go?
Well, it's been a really crazy week of football. I don't think anybody did well in the Pigskin Pick'em this week, and we're not even through it. But the week was really kicked off by a crazy but extremely entertaining game on Thursday night. Despite how it ended, how painfully it ended for Chiefs fans, I actually did find the game extremely entertaining. It really didn't feel like a Week 2 contest. It felt like a playoff game. It did end with the Broncos up 31-24. It was one of the many games this week where we've seen, considered to be a very good team, controlling the game at times, but just handing the game to the other team as often as possible. The Chiefs, you know, the only time that Denver actually had the lead in this game was in the last 30 seconds, and that's because the Chiefs, while leading most of the game, it got up to a 14-0 lead in the first half. The Chiefs actually managed to have 5 turnovers, and I had to look this up looking through tons of box scores. The last time the Chiefs had 5 turnovers in a game was Week 4 of the 2012 season, and that was in the worst season of the franchise. You know, we were the worst team in the league. That really is something that is totally uncharacteristic of the Andy Reid Chiefs. It was an absolute shocker the way that the game went out. A lot of people are saying, oh, there's a lot of positives here because the Chiefs, you know, they looked actually really good in between their critical mistakes. The fact is, I don't believe in moral victories or any of that kind of stuff. A loss is a loss is a loss. People are already kind of pointing the finger at, there was some weird signature Andy Reid play calling in this game, but I don't think you can put it at the head coach. I mean, it's like, it's a law of physics. You turn over the ball 5 times in a game, you will not win. It does not matter who you play against. Or even what plays you call, if that's going to be the way things go. And it did end with a crushing fumble by our hero, Jamaal Charles, his second of the game, which was scooped up and running for the late touchdown to win it for the Broncos, literally in the last seconds. What was interesting, just looking at from the Chiefs' perspective, looking at the Broncos, the Gary Kubiak offense still doesn't appear to be working in any way, at least not against good defenses. The Chiefs were stuffing everything they were doing. And the only time that the Broncos actually got things moving, it seemed like there had been a coup d'etat on the sidelines. And Peyton Manning decided he was going to do his no huddle, Omaha, Omaha thing out of the shotgun and just sort of picked out what he thought was the weakest defensive back on the Chiefs and actually was able to get some success there. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how that – that to me just seems like a power struggle that's going to continue. I mean, basically they have to either decide that Peyton is the coach, and I think he's a better coach than Gary Kubiak based on the returns so far, or if, you know, the Broncos are actually going to continue to have a traditional hierarchy or not. I mean, the positives for the Chiefs are, you know, our first-round rookie, Marcus Peters, looks like the real deal. I think he's going to be in the conversation for Defensive Rookie of the Year with having a pick six and a lot of fast defense. And overall, I mean, you know, the Chiefs are going to be okay. I mean, I still think we were the better team in this game. And I think we're still set up to have a good year. But it was a rough way to lose.
Yeah, yeah, that pick six was amazing. I thought that Marcus Peters play was really beautiful. I have one other big question for you, Nick. So how did you feel about the play calling on the final drive? Do you think he should have been handing off to Charles? You know, should he just been taking knees? Should he have been throwing? That's the big question I've seen people question. I know the game was an epic game. But in that final moments, do you agree with what Andy's calls were there?
I actually do because, I mean, generally handing the ball off in that situation, I mean, it's only 1 degree, you know, more risky than kneeling it. I mean, it's pretty much the safest thing you can do. And with Jamaal Charles, he can break one any time. And at that point, when the game is tied, I mean, you know, you don't want to start chucking Hail Marys all over the field trying to get into the end zone. But in that case, all you have to do is try to get into field goal range. And if you can, then you can win it. And I think, you know, I would have been much more upset if the way that game had ended was we knelt the ball, go to overtime, lose the toss, Peyton Manning charges down the field, you know, score the touchdown, over, and that we had that opportunity and we didn't take it. I would always much prefer. I mean, if you're going to assert that you're a good team, I think you should try to seize your destiny and actually win the game when you still have points, you know, still have time on the clock, reasonable amount of time on the clock during regular time. You know, no one thought that Jamaal Charles was going to fumble it for the second time. I mean, that's why it was just so jaw-droppingly shocking for Chiefs fans. But I think the percentage play was that. And the other thing is, I mean, by that time of the game, although the Chiefs have been totally dominating the Broncos in the first half, the one formula that, like I said, that Peyton had figured out was that he was just targeting our the guy who's really our fourth cornerback who we had playing on the outside, basically in the number two spot, because our number one cornerback, Sean Smith, is out on a suspension. And Peyton Manning, PFF broke down the stats. Basically, he threw, it was like something like 9 of 13 and a touchdown throwing against that guy, Jamaal Fleming, whereas he was like 50% passing with the interceptions and generally bad at throwing at anybody else on the field. Against the Chiefs. So basically he figured that out. He figured out that this is our one weakness, this is our Achilles heel. And I think there's a decent chance that he would have been able to do a successful drive in overtime. So I agree with the call.
No, that makes sense. That's great. I just wanted to hear it from, you know, you hear all these pundits talking about it. I wanted to hear it from a KC fan. That's a great insight. Thank you, man. Moving on to the New England Buffalo game. I'm going to throw this out to Sam, who is not a super fan of either of these teams, but he had a chance to watch this game. Buffalo came a lot closer than I think a lot of us thought in taking down New England. New England won, but Buffalo was, you know, they were getting beat up early, but eventually got in that game. How close was it? What did you think of it, Sam?
Buffalo made it close, but the score was a lot closer than the game was. The Patriots had this game handled early. And then some people say they were running up the score. Some others will say they were just playing football, and there was a fumble. They let Buffalo back into the game, but I never really felt like the Patriots were threatened. Tom Brady continued his FU tour, throwing over 450 yards and 3 touchdowns. Gronk got another touchdown. Edelman had a couple of great plays. I think that the Patriots offense is just going to hum all season. I think they're scary, and I think that's important because when's the last time Bill Belichick had 12 days to prepare for a rookie quarterback and he gives up 3 touchdowns? Not a rookie quarterback, but a first-year quarterback, and he gives up 3 touchdowns. This Buffalo team looks better than I thought, but this Patriots offense just looks close to unstoppable at this point.
Yeah, I think they're pretty amazing. I am very curious to see how Buffalo will do against lesser teams, not the Super Bowl champions who are on a roll, like you said, a great phrase, the FU tour of Brady. But if they play other teams, I'm curious to see who Buffalo is going to take down this year. Let's move on to Houston, Carolina. Monty, This is a game, I mean, not the sexiest of game. Two teams that I think people are not super excited about this year. But what did you see out of these two teams today?
I think this game kind of came down to Cam Newton reasserting himself as just an excellent player in this league. I'm sure if you haven't seen it already, you're going to see he ran in and flipped over for a touchdown run, literally jumped somersault in the air. I think he had over 70 yards rushing himself. Carolina, you know, like you said, they're dealing with a lot of injuries and they're still finding their way. But I think that Cam Newton, if they're going to continue on and be competitive in that division, which I think 8-8 is going to be competitive in that division, he's going to have to do it himself. And you saw it today. He kind of did everything. Greg Olsen came alive, I think, last week. Fantasy owners were complaining he didn't get enough looks. He had 6 catches for 70-some yards. And for the Houston Texans, I think they are just counting the days until Arian Foster gets back on the field. They did not look very good. J.J. Watt still had, you know, some plays, even had a sack. But without a running attack, that offense doesn't stand a chance. I think Mallett threw it for over 50 times. And I watched Hard Knocks, and I'm pretty sure their recipe for success did not include Ryan Mallett throwing it for 55 times a game.
Yes, for sure. I think that's really interesting, yeah, that NFC South, I feel like now I'm worried the NFC East is becoming the NFC South. Our teams are all looking so abysmal, and maybe some of these NFC South teams will turn around. I don't know if Carolina's one of them, and New Orleans getting beat up today, I don't know. But I think it could be interesting to see what the Atlanta Falcons will end up doing if Carolina can figure it out even this year. And then Tampa Bay beating up today. Yeah, we'll get to that eventually. But Tampa Bay actually turning around and looking somewhat decent today. Let's move on to the Arizona-Chicago game. Sam, did you check this game out? What's going on with Cutler? How dominant did Palmer look? What was this game like?
Palmer actually, I mean, Fitzgerald made Palmer look excellent today, catching 3 touchdowns, turning back the clock, and having an excellent game. I think the thing that's most interesting about this Cardinals is Todd Bowles' insistence on playing veteran running backs and sitting his rookie running backs when they seem to have more promise. David Johnson this week had touched the ball 5 times for 42 yards and a touchdown, also had a return touchdown. And I just want Bowles to turn that guy loose. He makes plays every time he touches the ball. And it's frustrating to see Chris Johnson carrying the ball 20 times for 72 yards. I mean, there's no upside to having him. You could have anybody run into the line at 4.6 speed. It's not impressive, and it's frustrating because this Cardinals team looks good. I mean, Fitzgerald looks like his young self. John Brown looks good, and if they can have a running attack, you know, with David Johnson and bringing in Ellington for those passing downs, this team can be excellent. So I'm interested to see what happens there. I think the Bears they're not going to be a threat this year. Bruce Arians, sorry.
How about Chicago?
Chicago, I mean, it's the second week in a row where their points came on plays that didn't really matter. They didn't reach. The first touchdown was a nice pass, but Cutler, I don't think there's any hope for this team. Alshon still hurt. I think it's a reset season for them. I'm interested to see if Clawson's going to be the starter next week, but again, that's a very sad interest if you're a Bears fan.
No, for sure. Man, and I know Tom, yeah, as our super fan, is not a huge fan of Cutler. Moving on to the San Diego-Cincinnati game, I'm going to kick it over to Nick. What did you think of these two teams, two of your rivals here? Who was looking good? What do you think of these teams? What are their chances?
Yeah, I mean, they're both interesting teams. I was watching the game primarily because obviously the Chargers are a division rival and we're playing the Bengals in a couple of weeks. You know, it was a game where I think Andy Dalton looked really good. He is one of those quarterbacks, you know, the same vein of Alex Smith that I think takes a lot of flack and people view him as being the guy who's really limiting the team's potential overall. But I mean, he went 16 for 26, 214 yards and 3 touchdowns, and really seemed to be able to get the ball in the hands of his weapons, of which they now have several. I mean, you know, you had Tyler Eifert is now really emerging in a similar way. Like, you know, I think you now have this whole generation of these big basket. I mean, not that it's a totally new thing, these basketball playing or former basketball player tight ends, but, you know, with Travis Kelce and Eifert, I don't know how Ertz did today, but, you know, he looked really good. Obviously, you know, AJ Green, you know, made some plays. Philip Rivers got a bit of his as well. But honestly, overall this game, the guys that really sort of stood out to me was really more the running backs of each team. They both have interesting young running backs. Where, you know, Gio Bernard went for, he had 20 carries for 123 yards. And Melvin Gordon actually, you know, finally sort of started looking interesting and looking good. He, what's interesting about him, he doesn't have, you know, this amazing speed, I think, at the NFL level, once you see him on NFL tape as opposed to college tape. But he already seems to have the vision of a veteran. He was really, you know, finding the hole well, ended up with 16 carries for 88 yards. But overall, I mean, the Bengals pretty much controlled this game all the way through, and they look like the more serious playoff contender than the Chargers. The Chargers were up and down throughout the game, which is kind of how they always are. They have these sparks and little streaks of brilliance, sometimes that last a game, sometimes last two or three games, sometimes only last a quarter, and then they'll have long periods where they're just incredibly inconsistent, and that's the sort of, that seems to be the same Chargers we've known for the last 10 years.
Yeah, I'm very curious, and we always are down on Dalton. Can Cincinnati with Dalton be really competitive this year? It's going to be fascinating. Tennessee-Cleveland. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, this is Monty, and I watched the Cincinnati game last week, obviously, when they just destroyed the Raiders. I would not underestimate the addition of Geno Atkins, because now that he's back and he seems to be getting stronger every week, I think that that Bengals defense is going to be a serious contender down the stretch, so... Australian Simon and the Bungles, they've got a solid team. And I know it's a war of attrition as long as people don't get injured, but last year they made the playoffs with A.J. Green hurt and Atkins was out for the year. Those guys can stay healthy. Andy Dalton or not, I think that the Bungles will be there in the end.
Yeah, we're really seeing it's a great time. I think this year we're going to see a lot of teams that we're not expecting to be strong being strong. It feels like everything is really being shaken up, which is exciting. Tennessee versus Cleveland, two teams that I don't think are going to be there maybe at the end. Maybe if Mariota can pull off a miracle. Sam, how did that game look? What did you think of the Tennessee-Cleveland game? How is Mariota looking in his second game?
Mariota looks good. He's a rookie quarterback, so he's going to take some time. He's going to, you know, have his setbacks. But when he has his reads there, he makes his throws. He's beautiful. When he throws the ball, it looks beautiful. This Browns team has a good defense. I think last week seeing the Jets put up 30 points on them had me underestimating how good they were, but they have a bunch of good players, so it's not surprising to see that Marcus Mariota would struggle against this team compared to the defense he played last week at Tampa Bay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and Cleveland's offensive side of the ball, John Brooks, I mean, he threw the ball 15. He has this way of finding the players downfield if he can extend those plays, and along with a good and a decent running game, which they should have because their line is pretty good, this team could, you know, be a tough play as the season goes along. Travis Benjamin is just fast. He's incredible to watch. So this Browns team could be interesting. They could be late in the season when they're underdogs. They can be frisky.
Yeah, spoilers. Yeah, that's great. That's great. I think that would be great for Cleveland. If Cleveland at the end of this year could be spoilers, I mean, that's better than anyone is expecting at the start of this year. So that's great. Yeah, Detroit, Minnesota. For sure, man. I mean, the expectations, I think, were low out there. And Tennessee, too, even though they do have Mariota. I mean, I think Tennessee's showing a lot better than people were expecting. Detroit, Minnesota. I got a chance to watch this game. The big story of this game is that Minnesota really got that run game going. I think everyone who watched the game last week with Adrian Peterson had to be asking the question, is Adrian not going to be able to come back from this? Did he sit out too long? Was this whole court appeals that he had to go through too much? And, you know, is he going to be able to come back and be the Adrian Peterson we expect? The Niners have always played well against Minnesota, and Adrian Peterson were able to really shut him down. But today we saw what is more likely what we expect. He had something like 70 yards before we were even in the second quarter. He put up, you know, something like, I think he's in the 120s. Really a great game for him. They were able to handle Detroit handedly. It didn't look too difficult for them. The question I always ask, I think this is very similar to San Diego. Detroit is like the San Diego of the NFC, where it's just this team that if they could just play consistently, they would be a strong team, but they have these long stretches of ineptitude, and then they have a moment where they really look unstoppable. And obviously that wasn't enough for Minnesota today. I think Minnesota is the opposite. Minnesota is going to be a grinder out team that plays really tight to the vest and solid ball and beat you that way. And they were able to do it today. Moving on to Tampa Bay, New Orleans. Ramona, we've been a while since we talked to you. I'm sorry, Ramona. Thank you for your patience. So many super fans to get through. But we have Ramona here. What did you think of the Tampa Bay, New Orleans game?
Well, welcome to the NFL, Jameis Winston. He actually looked like an NFL quarterback in this game, but it's kind of easy to do that against New Orleans. Just pretty pathetic defense. Chase right now in Louisiana is probably going, no, no. But it's true. I mean, Drew Brees looks like his shoulder. He's now admitting that his surgically repaired shoulder is causing him problems, and that makes me very nervous for this team. I just don't think that teams now fear New Orleans. It used to be, oh, God, we got to go to New Orleans. We got to play in that dome and that crowd. It is not a fear factor anymore, and Tampa Bay just rolled over them. And it was obviously, it was a game full of mistakes, a lot of missed points, fumbles. It just, Tampa Bay took better advantage of them, and that's why they won. So kudos to Jameis Winston for getting his first NFL win. But yeah, it was not a good game of football. There was, you know what, to me, honestly, this past week, there were no good games of football. Can I just say that? Just overall, if you look at just box scores, it's like, we had great games last week, and then this week it's just awful. I just don't get it.
The only game I think that was good was Tuesday. Denver-KC, I agree with Nick, was a really solid game. But yes, today we have had a bunch of really weird and bad games. The Oakland game was good, totally. I didn't get a chance to see it, but I will go back and watch it. That's good to hear. There was some good football. Because, yeah, man, it's been really ugly and just sloppy play, lots of penalties all over place. I like to see New Orleans not do well anytime just because of the lesser brother, particularly bad coach, and to watch somebody who's like a rookie quarterback who looked horrible last week against Tennessee then go in and blow up that defense. Although, I have to admit, I know that they are, all of New Orleans, offense and defense, is playing with some hands tied behind their back by big contracts. But it begs the big question, like if they don't have the money to keep the players, like Graham, where they have to trade Graham away, I think they may be at the point, Peyton's got to go, Breeze has got to go, and that whole team has to turn over. They may be at that spot. I don't know if Sean Payton can survive him going, you know, Breeze retiring and another quarterback. What were we going to say?
I was going to say, I think that team is that they should shift to a running team, but Peyton's just play calling and offensive style is he keeps trying to go back to the well, like Drew Breeze is an all-pro, and they just need to run. Like, the last couple of years, when they run, they have success. When they try to switch over and become five wide receivers, they just don't have the horses.
Yeah, and this is also New Orleans' sixth home loss in a row. And that's important. Like, I mean, that's you can't do that in the NFL, particularly when just a few years ago, again, like I said, that was a fearful place to go into because it's loud and it's the. But I just don't think teams fear New Orleans anymore.
No, I think it's true. And I think it's interesting, right? These quarterbacks, you look at the really big quarterbacks like Carson Palmer and Peyton Manning, and yeah, they're starting to get old and maybe they can't make the same throws, but you don't see them fall off the same cliff, I think, as the undersized quarterbacks. I think someone like Breeze, as your arm starts to get weaker and you can't make those throws anymore, you can't see over the line and you're smaller. It just, they come to a disadvantage faster than I think the guys who are built who are 6'5 and are, you know, the prototypical quarterback. But I wish Breeze the best. He's been an amazing player. Sadly, I think maybe it's done there. If you can't win in the NFC South, I mean, yeah, what are you going to do? Atlanta, talk about the NFC South. Sam, I'm so sorry, man. I can't believe I feel sympathy for you, but I do. I was pissed last week when you gave a game to Dallas because you guys beat them. And for Eli Manning not to be smart enough to not know to just fall on his knees at the end of that game and take that win, I just don't understand. It's Eli Manning. He's so smart. I was so mad at him. But then this week I have all but sympathy to watch Atlanta. I really wanted you to beat Atlanta. And to see Atlanta be able to go from a 10-point deficit to win that game at the end had to be heartbreaking. How you feeling, Sam? Well, I didn't get to watch the game, but what was it like?
It was like slowly watching a train get to the end of the tracks and still go full speed where you know it's all going to fall and get destroyed, but you just continue watching anyway. And that's what watching the Giants is about. I think in our Slack group, I was telling Tim, I gave him the game early on. He was skeptical, but it was terrible. I mean, there's a delay of game on the 3rd-and-1 that knocked us back. It was Julio Jones tore us up. It was everything that could go wrong did go wrong. One small positive was how good Odell Beckham was in the first half. And they just seem to go away from him in the second half. It's no matter who the play caller is on these Giants, I just feel that the play calling lacks creativity and lacks common sense. Mm-hmm. It just, like, we were running with Andre Williams into the line, and I hate Andre Williams. I think Andre Williams isn't an NFL player. He runs to contact. It's just watching somebody rush straight into the opposing player as hard as he can over and over again just grinds my gears. But you know, if this Giants team keeps giving away games like this, we're not going to make the playoffs here. You just have to be smarter, and it's frustrating to watch that this keeps happening to them. I mean, there's no other way to say it. And you know, I was kind of resigned. I knew this season wouldn't be good, but when you're watching the games week to week and you see, you know, we held the Falcons to 10 points going into the fourth quarter, and you think like maybe this team has what it takes, and then it just all falls apart. So that's the Giants for you.
And that is a great feat, man. You guys seem to be bottling them up, and that is hard. That's a very prolific offense, and for you guys to hold them there. But, yeah, just a heartbreaking way to lose. Julio Jones is a beast. He's amazing. I have mad, mad respect for him. I think your secondary may be better than ours, and, you know, he gave us both troubles.
Yeah, I think the Giants played him smart until the last drive. They kept everything in front, said, Julio, here, catch your 7-yard pass and go down, and they dared them to keep doing that, and for most of the game was working. I think up until midway through the fourth quarter, he had 10 catches for like 77 yards or 8 catches for 77 yards or something like that. And then on one of the last plays, they just let him go one-on-one with Amukamara, and I don't think there's anybody in the league that stopped Julio Jones one-on-one, especially not Amukamara. So it was just these mental lapses, these game plan lapses. It's all over the field. It's been bad.
San Fran, Pittsburgh, Monty, you got a chance to see this. Obviously, yeah, last week with San Fran beating Minnesota, people thought San Fran might not be as bad as we were expecting. And then Pittsburgh put up, what was it, 40 on him? 43 points. Antonio Brown, you know, almost a 200-yard day. What did you think of this game?
You know, just from my perspective, it's early in the season. So for all of the Philadelphia Eagles fans out there, I think, you know, let's take a step back from the edge of the cliff. And for all of the Steelers fans who lost in, you know, that opening Thursday and they thought their team was looking bad and their defense didn't show up, it's still early, right? So San Francisco looked awesome against Minnesota on Monday night. And I think it's just the schedule makers didn't do them any favors because Pittsburgh had, 10 days to prepare for this. And San Francisco is going through all of that turmoil and everyone was either retiring or getting arrested or whatever was going on out in San Francisco that – when they got that big win on Monday night, I just think that it's inevitable, right? They had just like, you know, a little bit of a hangover going into this weekend. And the Steelers wanted this game and they needed it. And, I mean, everyone that you could name on the – I mean, Darius Hayward Bay got a touchdown and looked good. Antonio Brown went off for almost 200. Big Ben, I mean, he's crazy. So the Steelers had 10 days to sit there and get prepared for this game. San Francisco, I mean, I think they're going to be better than we expected at the beginning of the year. I mean, Pod had them like on the clock, ready to make their first pick in the draft. And I think that they're better than that. Carlos Hyde did leave the game a little bit in the first half, so I don't know if he was at full strength when he came back out on the field. But their team, you know, I honestly just think it was a hangover. They did move the ball once the game got out of reach, but boy, the Steelers came out and they looked like they were ready to let everyone know that they're going to make a run for the playoffs this year.
Yeah. No, it was very impressive. I mean, though, just I've seen the highlights and the passing, really, really impressive. Great day for Ben.
Ryan Shazier, the linebacker they drafted, I think he's out of Ohio State. That guy is a stud, and he had a great game, and I think he's going to be, like, if you don't know who he is now, and you'll learn soon. He's a stud.
No, I love him, and he's so small, too. He's just doing so much for that size. He's not huge, but he's in every play. He's in the backfield all the time, so fast, so smart. I totally agree, and it was fascinating to hear everyone really ripping on the Pittsburgh defense. And then, I mean, I know still letting San Francisco put up 20-something points isn't like they were like a shutdown defense, but I think Shazier and a couple other players they have in there are playing really, really well.
St. Louis, Washington. It's going to be a transition as they go from their Hall of Famers to this younger crew, but they've got talent, and I think once they get it together, the Steelers, you know, just like the Steelers always do, they might miss the playoffs a year, but they're right back in the mix the next year.
Yeah, if they can keep filling in. I mean, as long as they have Antonio and Ben, I mean, they're going to put up points. So, yeah, is why those guys are keeping the offense up. They just need to rebuild that defense on the other side, and they're going to be in great shape. St. Louis, Washington. I'm going to kick this over to Ramona. Fascinating. St. Louis beats Seattle last week and then loses to Washington. What is going on? What is going on? How did this happen, Ramona? Is Washington now the favorite in our division? Is this how crazy topsy-turvy this world is? What's going on?
Okay, calm down. Breathe. It's not that serious. I mean, I think honestly, St. Louis is coming off of a very emotional loss. I mean, emotional win last week. You're playing on the road. You know, sometimes trap games happen. They do. You know, Kirk Cousins threw for 23 for 27 for 203 yards. You know, he was only sacked twice. And then there's this rookie running back, Matt Jones, for the Redskins that ran for 123 yards for two touchdowns. So, you know, and Kirk Cousins didn't turn over the ball. I mean, when you do that, things go really well. It was disappointing to me, number one, that Washington won, because that's never good. Two, I love the St. Louis Rams. I'm on record saying that I think that they're going to do very well, and I do think they're going to do very well. It's just that we got to remind ourselves that this is still a young team, the youngest in the NFL. And with youth comes immaturity, and immaturity means that we go from, yay, we beat the former, you know, champions over here, to now we got to face this mediocre team, and maybe mindset wasn't right. So I watched a good portion of the game. I had friends over, and we were watching it. So the Redskin fans in my life are very happy for many, many reasons. But overall, I mean, I wasn't necessarily impressed with Washington per se. I was more concerned that the defense of St. Louis didn't show up. Nick Foles looked really bad. He not played to the level that I expected of him, and which is surprising because he's really familiar with Washington. So I don't think St. fans have anything to really worry about yet, but I would like to see this team kind of learn from this loss and go, okay, what do we need to do to improve?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, I saw that Nick Foles under 200 yards. I mean, that's not going to cut it. And they're playing in Washington. I mean, to go all the way across the country is a tough trip. I was really not expecting that. I didn't get to watch the St. Louis Seattle game, so I'm not really sure how they pulled that miracle off. I need to go back and watch that. But I just didn't see them to turn around and lose to Washington. I think it's going to be a couple weeks, obviously, until everyone figures out who they are and where they are. Moving on to Miami Jacksonville, I'm going to kick this over to Sam. What did you think of this game? Miami has now struggled. Ron, who jumped in, I was so mad as we're getting our butts kicked in the middle of that Dallas game. Ron jumps in and he's like, oh, I was distracted by my game. You've got to be angry now, Sitko. I was like, yeah, I'm angry. I'm angry because you're coming and throwing salt and your team's having trouble with teams like the Jags and teams
so
like the Washington
too.
Redskins. What?
That made me so mad, too. I was like, he put me on the tweet, too. I'm like, oh, my God. Focus on your own game and the fact that you're losing to freaking Jacksonville. Oh, my God. Stop it. No.
Oh, my Lord. They lost. They lose the game by 2 points. Miami's, yeah.
That's why he lost. That's why he lost. Karma.
Karma. He got the Suggs hit. So what do you think there, Sam, on Miami-Jacksonville? Is Jacksonville looking legit? Is Miami – they're having to come back in all their games. Is Miami just a joke? What's going on here?
Miami seems to be starting games slow and
– we may have lost Sam completely. Sam, come back.
Much like Eli's offensive paralysis. We've lost Sam. I shouldn't be mean. No, I'm just still – sad. It's a sad day. You know, here's the thing that was interesting about Miami and Jacksonville is that Ryan really put his neck out there on your guys' previous show and said, we're going to win. And Ron was concerned because they did not play very well against Washington. They almost lost against Washington, which is definitely a mediocre team. And, you know, I just feel like, again, the defense for the Dolphins still hasn't figured itself out. Yeah, you've got this great weapon in Sue, but I feel like they fully are able to utilize him yet. I don't think Tannehill's playing up to the level that Ron claims he's supposed to be playing to. I've never seen this level of Tannehill. It'd be kind of cool to watch. So yeah, I didn't actually get to see any of the game, but looking at the box score, I mean, it just goes down to is like, again, which team made fewer mistakes? And I think that's the overall theme of this week. Which teams made the fewer mistakes? Because it was just, and it's funny because you mentioned, you know, Thursday night football was better. It's so opposite of what's supposed to happen because Thursday night's supposed to be the bad. It just, my head hurts. Yeah. So,
exactly.
You know, again, Jacksonville still has a young team. They've got a lot of good weapons. I feel like they're drafting well. So, you know, they could make a tiny bit of a run, you know, maybe go 8-8. But, you know, Miami, I think they're going to be fine.
I think you're underestimating the Joe Namath guarantee. when you're a super fan and you go out on the line and you guarantee, I mean, that's got to
He did say Joe Namath.
The football gods are going to come back and say, he believes you saw what happened.
This Baltimore Oakland game, Monty, I know, as I said at the beginning of this podcast, I think you are the most happy super fan of all of us because the rest of us are playing pathetic games and losing in weird ways. How was that game for you? You say it was a good game. What was the difference? What made you guys come out on top?
Well, let's say the final great games by no penalties and, you know, good play, then maybe it wasn't a good game. It just came down to the wire, so it was a good game to watch. To be fair, I did try to get in on this podcast before I knew the Raiders were going to win. I tried to throw it out there earlier this week, so I'm not just jumping on the podcast to talk about the Raiders.
Totally.
But watching the game, I mean, I read the king of the superfans, Rex, is right up about Baltimore, and it's kind of all you can really hope for when you're one of the underdog teams. It almost sounded like he was on to Oakland, and they're just looking past them, getting ready for the real opponent later on in the schedule. And as soon as Todd locked him up as his eliminator lock of the week, I knew the Raiders had a chance. I don't know if you've been following Todd for the past few years. He stuffed that eliminator lock of the week. So if you're a team with the Raiders and Todd locks up your opponent, then you better watch the game because you know your guys are going to show up.
Nice.
For me, watching the game, I mean, the Raiders' offense, I guess the Raiders are a young team that got their lunches handed to them since this is a PG podcast last week, and I was really curious to see how they're going to show up, where they're going to kind of come out and just accept that losing is the way that the Raiders are, and that's the way it is, and let's move on, or is Jack Del Rio going to get his squad fired up to show up and play? And if you'd have told me going into the week the Raiders are going to put up 37 points on the Baltimore Ravens defense, I would have been ecstatic. I think that, you know, culmination of things, Baltimore probably was looking forward to playing against Cincinnati next week. The Suggs injury definitely hurt. They didn't get as much pressure on Carr as probably they would have, but, you know, for Sitko and anyone else out there who doesn't like Suggs, the Ravens tried to make up for it by a lot of cheap shots at the end. I thought they could have called a few more penalties for late hits. They played through the echo of the whistle, as they say. And a couple of them actually came back and bit Baltimore in the butt. The Raiders did everything. You know, I could almost hear Todd Bader's smirking laughter going forward into next week because the Raiders, I think, had 15 penalties. Derek Carr played a really solid game, but he's young, and he made a terrible pass right at the end of the game. But the Raiders actually held up and held him to a field goal, but Carr threw a terrible interception. I thought that was going to be the game, and I thought I was going to have to listen to Pod smirk about it going forward. If you read my write-up on Facebook, I was really concerned about the Raiders' cornerbacks and their secondary. Charles Woodson actually played this game, but you could tell he was hurting. He did not get in there and make the tackles you're used to seeing him make. The cornerbacks, though, actually stepped up and played. It was something I haven't seen from DJ Hayden and Carey. They were making plays on the ball, and it was phenomenal. Like, the Raiders' defensive backs were making plays. Khalil Mack, I don't know if he had a groin injury or was cramping up because of the heat out in Oakland, but he was kind of in and off the field all day. They were not getting any pressure to Flacco. Flacco looked like he was just stepping up and carving them apart. But at the end of the day, the Raiders' offense was making plays. Amari Cooper set off the game with a 68-yard touchdown pass where he burned. And, you know, Jimmy Smith is not a slouch. He's an up-and-coming cornerback, and Amari Cooper burned him. Not to say that he's going to be the greatest, but teams might have to think about putting double coverage on him. And if that happens, it's going to open up some other things. Crabtree made some great catches. So people who've been hating on Crabtree, he's a talented receiver if his head's in the game. So maybe you just need to sign him to a one-year contract every year so that he has to play to get money because he showed up to play. Seabass was just cranking, you know, 50-yard, 48-yard field goals from the infield just like he always does. And at the end of the day, the Raiders, I think, just showed up. Like, everything I was hoping at the beginning of the year, when you go to Oakland, you better show up or they're gonna surprise you. That's what happened this week. And it's early in the year. Maybe Baltimore was sleeping. Maybe they weren't. But, boy, the Raiders' offense looked good. The Raiders' defense is not good. So I don't think they're going to be knocking on the door to make the playoffs. But they might just surprise some people. And I bet the entire AFC conference was cheering almost as loud as I was when the Raiders were marching down the field at the end of the game.
Nice, nice, man. Yeah, that's a big win for you guys. Beat Baltimore. Baltimore's a very solid franchise. I think you guys are turning your team around. That's awesome to see, man. Congrats. Great win. I'm glad that happened for you. For us, Dallas is the final game. Dallas and Philly. I'm going to kick it to Ramona just to start because I don't want to bawl and cry right now. What did you think, Ramona? What are all the things that are wrong with our stupid team?
What, no sunshine and rainbows this time, Sicko?
No, man.
I'm just curious.
Alternating. I don't know what to have with sunshine and rainbows when Chip Kelly's offense is completely – I think right now – I saw a stat. I think Dez Bryant has 21 carries on the year for 11 yards. That's what Dez Bryant has done. Not Dez Bryant. That's what DeMarco Murray has done for us.
Yeah.
And then
– not only that, but I think – like I saw a stat that said, like, Tom Brady has more rushing yards than DeMarco Murray. That's a problem.
Oh, yeah. No. The second – when Whedon got in the game, his first, like, second play, he broke out of the pocket and ran for 13 yards, and he had more rushing yards than we did in the entire game. Whedon outrushed our team in one play. Ridiculous. And then the drops are out of control. Jordan Matthews had several key drops today. Cooper had a drop. Austin had a key drop. And then at the end of the game, Ertz had another drop. This has happened two games in a row now. We're driving on a final drive that may or may keep us in the game, and Ertz or somebody pops up a ball. It's, you know, in their hands, pops it up like a perfect little fly ball and caught for an interception to end the game. There's so many things I'm upset about. Dallas once again played horribly like they did last week. They did not deserve to win this game. They had an atrocious number of penalties. There were so many penalties in this game that there was no flow whatsoever. We broke Romo's collarbone. They're without Dez Bryant. They're without Romo, and they still beat us. It's just ridiculous. Our team is playing really bad. And it's scary. The only thing I can say is Romo's now out with a collarbone injury. That could be 10 weeks. If they don't have Dez or Romo for 10 weeks, I mean, that team could totally fall apart. So I literally think the NFC East is now the NFC South. Some team is going to take this division at like 8-8 or 9-7. And who knows? Maybe they'll be good at that point. I still think it's going to be Dallas or the Eagles because the Giants have given up two games even worse fashion than we did. Although against maybe better teams, the same teams. That's fascinating. I'm just depressed and sad, and I'm definitely turning. All of my optimism about the team is going away. I'm not saying I still have faith in Chip and all that, but we're further away than I thought we were. And I have to say,
way too early. Just take a step back. That division is up for grabs, and I just think that the Eagles, it's going to take them a minute or two. They got a new quarterback. They got a new running back. Just take a deep breath. What was Aaron Rodgers' quote last year? R-E-L-A-X. The Cowboys are not going to be – I mean, if they go 500 in the next 8 games, good for them. But Redskins, come on. And then the Giants, right?
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Your Eagles are going to be okay.
I get that right now, but no. No, I mean, my problem is – the injuries. Hendricks out. Kendricks out. Those are two huge injuries for us. And that's critical. Yeah. And Kiko with the knee, I'm going, we just got him. He's brand new to us. Maxwell, can we cover anybody? I mean,
oh my God. Byron Maxwell.
How much did we spend on this guy? And I'm like,
$1 million.
Oh,
it's so frustrating. For him to be that far off on that final Terrence Williams, I mean, the game was already over. It doesn't matter. But, you can't play 10 yards off when there's no safety. No. They just run the slant. In Madden, I would do the same thing. Tim Tebow did that to the Steelers. That's why the Steelers lost that playoff game. Even Tim Tebow, even Whedon can make that throw. If you stand back and let the guy run and cut, it's over. There's no chance. So frustrating. The one thing I do have to say positive, Unlin and Billy Davis were getting a lot of crap as if they were the problem last week, and clearly the defense is not the problem. Our defense is better than it was last year, but our offense, I mean, there was, until that Terrence Williams touchdown, there were no offensive touchdowns in this game. Neither Dallas nor the Eagles could score a friggin' touchdown. Totally pathetic. It's just very disheartening. We'll see, man. This was my Super Bowl and it did not go well. I really wanted to just come out and destroy Dallas and it didn't happen. Any other thoughts before we finish off this ugly game? Any thoughts on Dallas or Philly?
I'll give a lot of thoughts, but my concerns is that Washington has a better record than us right now. something horribly wrong has gone on in the football universe. And I just am like, okay, what do I need to do to fix it? I need Chip to get into DeMarco Murray's head and go, and the O-line, can you give Murray some room to run? It's ridiculous. I just am going, I'm just watching them. I've now watched both games and I've looked at the analysis and I'm just going, it's us. It's not the teams. The other two teams were not that good. I'm sorry, Atlanta, I'm not impressed with. I'm not. I'm just not. They got lucky twice now. So that's really frustrating because then we've got the egotistical super fan here in Atlanta rise up. I'm like, yeah, I'll show you rise up. You know, it's just, it's so frustrating because team can be so, so good. And Bradford is a good quarterback. And you know what? I feel like, you know, that time where he was throwing, you know, on his knees and I'm gasping for breath going, oh God, is he injured too? I'm ready for him to get over that fear. I'm ready for him and Murray to kind of act the way they did in college. I'm ready for this team to figure out that, hey, we are a championship level quality team and they've got to get out of their head, brush off these things and go into New York and take care of business next week. If we don't do that, the season is over.
I love it. Earlier this week, I said 0-2 would be really bad and I think it would be a must win. And you were like, you're saying no way, but no, you're now on board. 0-3, end of the world, sky is falling. The one thing I do have to say to give Dallas some props, I hate you. I hate Dallas. I hate everything about that team. But the one player who was just, well, one, I have to give some props to Brian. I thought that defensive line, Mincy and Crawford, I saw some of these guys that he's been talking about play pretty well today. And then the other one, though, that was amazing was Sean Lee. Sean Lee was all over the field today. He was making plays left and right. That interception he had in the end zone, he wasn't even looking. He literally just turns around the ball, hits him in the arm, and he just whoop, closes his arms and has it. That's an incredible interception. He had a great game. Sean Lee's a beast. I like it much better when Sean Lee's hurt. I have to just, yeah, that was an incredible game for Sean. He literally was the best player on the field today. All right, our first superfan battle we have here. I have Andrew, who is the Jets superfan. How you doing, Andrew?
What's up, Sicko?
And today, Andrew's team, this weekend, Andrew's team is going up against the Colts. I have here as well our superfan from the Colts, Dan. How you doing, buddy?
Doing good. Hoping to get in the win column this week.
Guys, your two teams are playing. As you just mentioned there, you guys had a loss. The Jets had a win. Tell us, Dan, how are you guys going to beat the Jets? How are you feeling about your team?
Week one was definitely an eye-opener, especially on the offensive side of the ball. It looked like Andrew Luck was getting things going pretty good in the preseason, but week one rolls around. He plays one of the best defenses in the NFL, and week two doesn't get any better. So having lost T.Y. probably for this game, he's going to have to find another receiver or two and to step up and fill that void. And while Andre Johnson's a great receiver, it just didn't look like Andrew Luck was very comfortable going to him. So hopefully they work that out this week. And then the other side of the ball, defensively, the defensive line did a good job stopping LeSean McCoy. But once they got hit with north-south stuff with Carlos Williams, they struggled a little bit with that. Mm-hmm. So I expect to see plenty of north-south stuff from Ivory. So what do you think there, Andrew?
It's the same old story with the Colts as it is every single year. They, when they face a power running team that could dominate them with their offensive line, they wilt there. And that's what, and that was the Patriots game plan, and that's in the playoffs, and that was Buffalo's game plan. Do you know who had the highest rating in that game for run blocking on the Bills offensive line? To show you this bully concept, Richie Incognito had a 2.5 grade for PFF, which I don't know if you can put that in context, but that sounds pretty good. And considering the results that Carlos Williams had running that style, I could see the Jets dominating on the ground this week. We're going to have to, because if we have Ryan Fitzpatrick throwing more than 40 passes in this game, we're not likely going to be in the situation we want to be.
To go along those lines, I pretty much agree. The nice thing is that week one, the Colts defensive line actually looked like it knew what it was doing. The problem was the inside linebackers were just guessing, and that's going to be the big problem. Can they actually learn from that and grow into week two to stop that north-south game? The preview I have set up is, you know, if Seal Moore plays, somebody lost their job. Moore's not ready to come in and play, but somebody's got to stop up and take advantage of some of this improved defensive line play and hit somebody.
Right, DeQuell Jackson, Jarrell Freeman were not getting it done last week. Henry Anderson looks good at the rookie out of Stanford, and the pickup Kendall Langford also. So on the initial attack, you guys are good, but the linebackers aren't taking advantage. But going back, we were talking about the Colts offense and the loss of T.Y. Hilton. Obviously, it's a big loss, but can you put it into context? Because watching Andre Johnson this week, it looked like he was very slow and that he wouldn't be able to be the go-to guy you guys need. Hilton could be that guy, but the reports vary. Some say it's a really bad bruised knee, could keep out a couple of weeks. Some people say it's day-to-day. No one really knows. But it's good for you guys that the game's on Monday night because maybe he will play. But just how big of a deal would it be if he's out?
He's Andrew Luck's guy. He played a little over three quarters, and he had 7 catches, 10 targets. I mean, Luck's just forcing it to him right now because he's the only receiver he trusts. So having Moncrief come in as the starter opposite Andre Johnson's, it's going to be bad news for the Colts. They'll probably adjust a little bit and play more 2 tight end than they did against the Bills, but Fleener's not the best run blocker in the world. Dwayne Allen's going to have to sit back, and he's going to have to be a pass blocker essentially in that game if they pass. So they'll probably adjust to more of a 2 tight end set, try to run the ball a little bit. But even with Frank Gore, they still didn't run the ball very well in their first game. So that's what I expect to see, but I don't know.
Yeah, if you're the Jets, you want the Colts to play 2 tight end. Do you want them to play your style, that type of game? You don't want them to open it up, go 4 or 5 wide. Even though the Jets made upgrades at the cornerback spot this offseason, the guys that Revis typically struggles with are the guys that could just run right by him, who just have just that burning speed. Like the Jet fans remember Ted Ginn always. Anybody, Ted Ginn, for some reason, would give Revis trouble. And T.Y. Hilton could have been that guy. But now Philip Dorsett is going to have to step up. And he was very shaky on special teams. That's true. But you don't know if you can trust him to make the play when the play needs to be made.
Yeah, and on a big stage on Monday night, it will be a tough first game to make the eye-opening plays that he was drafted to do. He stepped in for T.Y. a little bit in week one, made a couple of catches that were probably designed for T.Y., but, you know, he didn't jump off the screen at you.
Dan, how confident are you on the other side of the ball that you'll be able to stop the power run game of Chris Ivory, which looked really good against an improved Cleveland defensive line last week? Obviously, the Colts have had trouble with those type of running backs like LeGarrette Blount. Is that a concern for you, or do you think they'll be able to load the box and you'll be able to win the one-on-one matchups on the outside against Marshall and Decker?
The outside matchups, well, I think we'll win one with Davis playing a corner. I don't know if Toller's going to be back this week or not. Toller's leads the league in defensive pass interference and defensive holding every year, so if they're able to get away with holding and knocking Decker around a little bit and put Davis on Marshall, they'll be fine on the one-on-ones. But it's all going to be about, can they make the stop at the against the run? I mean, that's, in my opinion, what's going to be able to define the game for Indy defensively. And if they can do that and keep it, you know, keep the Jets off the board, they'll have a chance. They got beat on some big plays by Buffalo, including the big run by Tyrod Taylor that really opened that game up. And the Jets don't have that threat, so.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to worry about Ryan Fitzpatrick running 40-yard.
yeah, somebody will tackle him by the beard.
What's fascinating with you guys is to hear this, that it literally sounds, as I'm listening to you both, that the Colts are less confident and the Jets are more confident. And I know, Andrew, you're a confident guy, but you're also a practical guy, and I know if your team isn't doing well, you're going to, you know, you're not the kind of guy who's going to sugarcoat it. You would tell us. So how are you feeling at the end of this? Are you guys clearly going to win this game, Andrew? What is your prediction?
I mean, it's definitely a clear answer with the Jets. I think we all know that. But again, I think it comes down to, can Andrew Luck continue to carry this team when he has to carry this team? Because look at all these matchups. I feel like the Jets have advantages. They have advantages in the trenches on both sides of the ball. Frank Gore looked slow last week. He didn't even get a full diet of carries. They don't have a second running back to give the ball to. They're looking at Mod Bradshaw, apparently, that before it came out today. To stop the outside receivers. Yes, Vontae Davis did an amazing job on Sammy Watkins last week. Sammy Watkins didn't have a single catch. But after that, who are you guys relying on to stop? That's why the addition of Marshall this offseason was so great. So it sounds like I think we're going to win.
So what's your prediction? No more questions. I hear the questions. I know there's lots on both sides. I mean, like, yeah, but what is the prediction? What's the score?
You're going to force me to pick a score. I'd say the Jets come out with the win. I think it's 24-21. That's the optimistic.
All right, so not as huge. Great, that's great. That puts it in perspective, right? It's not this huge blowout or anything, but you do think they have the advantage. How are you feeling with the Colts, Dan? What are you thinking the record's going to be, the score's going to be?
I think that Andrew Luck's going to revenge himself, and he's going to come out, take advantage of his elite abilities, and come out on top 31-27.
So, guys, I think that is about it for today. That was a quick show. I'm glad we got through. That's a lot of games to get through quickly. Thank you guys for being so on point. I appreciate all my super fans being here today. If you want to follow us, you can find us on at NFU Podcast on Twitter. If you go on to Facebook and you just type in Next Fan Up, you will find our podcast. Ramona, thank you for being an awesome special guest today. Where can people find you, Ramona? Give us a little blurb about your own podcast.
Sure, it's the Sports Gal Pal. I'm on Mondays and Thursdays, just like the guys here at Adam Next Fan Up. So I do full shows on Mondays, and then Thursdays are my What to Expect This Weekend. So all my Gal Pal Nation ready for, you know, the games and a lot of different sports, not just football. Brian, the Cowboys Superman, will be my guest on Thursday's show, so that should be oh so fun for me. Yay!
Have fun.
I know. I'm just going, God almighty. However, on the last Thursday show, I did get Tim to admit that he was a Girl Scout in a former life. So that was enjoyable. So if you haven't heard that, you can hear that on blogtalkradio.com/nextfan. Listen to me, like I'm promoting your show. blogtalkradio.com/sportsgalpal. I'm thinking of those 2-a-days where I kept mentioning you guys' podcast all day long. But yeah, no, I always love coming on here. Plus, now that means 3 times. So Pod Vader's going to flip his lid because I don't think he's really happy. I've been on other times. He'll get over it. Maybe he's just glad that I'm like Team Sicko and not him on Thursday shows. What can I say?
Nice. Thank you, Ramona. I love following you on Twitter as well and being able to like tweet at you during the games. It's been a pleasure. It's nice to have a fan out there who sees the world as I do. Everyone else on the show today, Nick, Sam, Monty, thank you guys so much. You guys all killed it. We will be back next week on Thursday. Please join us to hear Pod. He will be previewing all the shows. He will have some battles of the super fans, which are really fun, guys. They've been really great. That is all that I have to say today.
We're on to Cincinnati.